You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, you'll be happy to hear it's been a good year for Irish butterflies. The Irish butterfly population increased by almost a third last year. How do we know this, you might ask? Are people actually counting all the butterflies of Ireland as they fly around merrily on a summer breeze? Well, the answer is yes. And sitting in front of me now is the man who coordinates all of those dedicated butterfly counters. His name is Dr. Tomás Murray. He's an ecologist with the National Biodiversity Data Centre, and he is project coordinator with the Irish Butterfly Monitoring Scheme. Tomás, thank you for coming to the programme. You're very welcome.
No, thank you for the invitation.
Am I right? Is that what you do now? You're running around there's one, there's another one. Oh, there's an duck, there's another one. Is that what's going on?
Well, you pretty much, but in a really systematic fashion. So we're incredibly lucky. We have a fantastic team of over 150 volunteers on the books at the moment. And they're more than just volunteers, they're citizen scientists. They're going out systematically recording butterflies for us. So it's a huge commitment on their part. They're spending 26 weeks out of a year, once a week, walking a fixed route over a fixed time, doing a sort of a quantitative survey for butterflies, noting all the species and the abundance of them. So it really is sort of a gold standard in biodiversity data. It's fantastic.
Now, you say they're citizen scientists, but they must know their butterflies, because if you've got to go around and identify them, you've got to know what you're looking at.
Certainly. So we run a sort of regime of workshops and training days where we take the recorders in, we teach them butterfly identification, we teach them about the monitoring scheme, and then let them off. And over 1 or 2 years then, we can really see them improve. And we have regional coordinators that, again, help people along. And as the recorders themselves progress in their abilities to record, they help others onto the scheme. But it's primarily through our monitoring workshops that we can help people join the scheme.
And you really need people. And I'm just wondering, I mean, how does anybody outside of the bird mafia manage to get people interested? Because, you know, everybody knows what a bird is and you know what a butterfly is, but you're more likely to encounter a bird, so you can kind of identify the blackbird or the robin or the thrush. You mightn't know if it's a mistle thrush or a song thrush. You'll know the tit. You mightn't know if it's a blue tit, a black tit, a grey tit, a cold tit, but you'll know it's a tit probably. You'll know a sparrow. But when it comes to butterflies,
yeah,
they're not on the radar, really. Yeah, am I right in saying that?
That is true, but we like to think of them as honorary birds.
Answer, then you can say rubbish.
In a way, people now consider them honorary birds. So people who primarily study mammals and birds and things like that, they recognise butterflies as one of those key other indicator groups. So we run around maybe 5 or 6 regional workshops for recorders to come along and learn about butterfly biology and identification, and also bumblebee monitoring. We're also moving into bumblebee monitoring. We have a scheme now 2 years old. So for both groups, we run these schemes regionally. And if you go to our website, biodiversityireland.ie, and click on the events section, you'll see an upcoming workshop closest to you.
But how many members have you got? I'm thinking of Birdwatch Ireland, and I think Wings magazine might go to 12,000 homes. So they may have something like 12,000 registered members. So you get the magazine. Once you become a member, you get the magazine when it comes out quarterly. Isn't that the way it appears? And it drops in your letterbox, 12,000. That's good.
Yeah, it's sizable. And they have
Ireland, you know. Yeah. How many members would you have on your monitoring? Have you got a club or a group?
In a sense, we have people who have registered with us as sort of active recorders. So we have around 154 at the moment.
So
on the books.
Just the figure you mentioned earlier. I thought you might have had more people who are on the books who aren't counting. All right. No. Yeah, okay. Aina, sorry.
Why am I bright green? Can you see me bright green? If you're not on television, you'd see how bright green I am. In the 1970s, I was the head of the Biological Record Centre. And the arms and the legs. I was it. I was the only person working there. And I was supposed to be making distribution atlases of all Ireland's wildlife, except birds, because the bird people were doing the birds. So I was supposed to be doing mammals, butterflies. And one of my publications was a provisional atlas of butterflies in Ireland. And in those days, in the 1970s, there was just enough money for my salary, hardly even money for me to go off and look for butterflies myself, never mind to have wonderful things like this that you've produced, identification guides to Ireland's butterflies, never mind to have an expertise to run schemes like you're running, never mind that it was being taught in schools, because in the 70s, there wasn't even biology being taught in schools. It was just beginning to come in as a subject. So I think it's wonderful to meet you here today and to see how in 40 years, looking back, the situation has gone from people not knowing the difference between a butterfly and a moth per se, to people being able to identify 33 species. And the second thing, of course, is you're going on about the birds, Derek, that we've about 33 species of butterflies in the whole country.
400 and something species
birds,
of
that's
birds.
It. And secondly, then, birds are afraid of people and they fly away. Butterflies tend not to be. You can get up closer to them. Insects, generally speaking, don't care so much about people as bigger creatures like birds. But so now you're doing two things now. You're not just telling people the difference between one butterfly and another. In my day, everything was a red admiral. You know, whether it was or wasn't. I mean, most things are not red admirals. They're small tortoise shells, in fact. Mm. But everything was a red admiral in those days. And red admirals are a migratory species, so you wouldn't be getting them whenever I was getting records of them. And the second thing then is to how to carry out the survey, so that if you're walking on a straight walk, how do you count them? How do you know the one you've counted hasn't just flown past you when you count it again? So that you're not just making a map of the butterflies that we have or where they are even, but you're doing exactly the numbers of them at different times of the year as well. So you can have emergence patterns of the ones that are, most of these ones are in May, most of these ones are in August, there's two broods, there's three broods, whatever it is. It's a wonderful thing. So if I'm bright green, it's only because I'm 40 years too old. If all this was around now.
Oh, you're never too old to join a monitoring scheme. Not at all, not at all.
So anyway, what wonderful things you've been finding out. Last summer was because of the weather being good. Is that why we have a resurgence? Or was there actually a resurgence? Or was it the weather and because you have more recorders?
If anything, I think it was that the start of last summer was so poor that we have an increase of numbers this year, or in 2013 to be specific. So really, pretty much until May last year, I mean, the spring was appalling. And it was only after spring that out of the 60-odd thousand records that we brought in, we got 50,000 after May, when normally the scheme itself starts in the first week of April. So it really was like an Indian summer, but we got a huge flush of butterflies. The populations really did rebound. But even to be able to sit here and say 32% increase, again, 6 or 7 years ago, before the scheme sort of matured, we wouldn't even be able to have those numbers. We'd be sort of still talking in very vague terms of increases in range or decreases in range. Whereas now we can have very specific measures of those different, the changes in population.
Mm. We were counting birds
overall,
recently,
yeah.
And we
yeah.
had the most abundant bird was the wren. We reckon we have 6 million individual wrens. Have you numbers for butterflies, and which is the most common one? And how many of them are there?
We wouldn't have numbers in absolute terms, but across the sites that we have monitored, we can sort of say relative terms. We can say that is the most common. Like the speckled wood at the moment was the most common one in 2013. It was seen across the vast majority of the 123 sites. In other terms, then we can also say things that are still quite rare, like the pearl-bordered fritillary, or the Essex skipper, which is quite a new species really to Ireland. It's only arrived really in 2006 was the first record, and it's still in a small isolated location in the southwest of Ireland, southeast of Ireland.
Yeah, but when we're saying I'm saying if you go into a place, will you see 100 speckled woods and 6 large whites, or will there be loads of meadow browns? I mean, are you counting absolute numbers, or are you just saying when you go to a place, these are the species I see, and that, or you count
it's
an actual
absolute
numbers.
Numbers, yeah, it's absolute numbers. And then all those, if you think out of every single one site, you have data from 6 years and absolute numbers in every single species. So across the whole island then, across this network of 120 sites, mm-hmm. then we can get really precise measurements of how those populations are fluctuating across the years. So at the moment, we only have really enough hard data for out of the 33 we're monitoring for 14 to conduct those really formal analyses. But as the scheme matures, I mean, if you think the UK scheme started in 1976, this type of monitoring scheme, and our scheme is only 6 years old. So as the scheme matures, we're going to have more and more species feeding into that sort of national index of butterfly health as such. And how we're going to use the data in terms of how the butterflies reflect changes in land use, changes with climate change, things like that. Again, as the scheme matures and more people become involved, we can start answering those questions in a really rigorous manner, rather than the sort of general terms that we're trying
to
do right now.
Are they all living here? All the butterflies?
No, we have plenty of vagrants or migrants that come in occasionally. So there's three very common migrants, and Aine has already mentioned one, which would be the Red Admiral. Mm-hmm. We also have the Painted Lady and the Clouded Yellow. And so we don't really monitor their population specifically because, like that, their population sizes are dictated about where they're coming from.
Yeah.
So largely
and they
from
could get hammered en route.
Yeah, all those
the
different things.
Was bad.
Yeah. So when we see them in Ireland, it isn't really a reflection of what's happening in Ireland. It's a reflection of what's happening of where they're originating from.
Well, we talk, back to birds, we talk about the fantastic migrations that birds make, and they travel thousands upon thousands of miles. But birds have wings, and I know butterflies have wings, but they're well capable creatures. creatures and they're bombing along, and some of them are very heavy and some of them are very light. But the butterfly, you know, you'd blow it away. And it travels thousands of miles as well. No?
It does. And that's the, I mean, fascinating thing. Even the monarch butterfly comes from the Americas.
The monarch does in America. But the ones we get here, generally speaking, do a hopscotch thing. The ones that start out in the Atlas Mountains, the Red Admirals, their children will fly across to Spain. They'll breed and they'll fly to the north of Spain. So the ones we'll get in Ireland will only have come from England. They won't have got up one day in the Atlas Mountains, scratched their heads
so
and flown all
Ireland.
The way to Ireland. Now, the monarchs in America are different because they're on mainland territory. The monarchs we get here come from the Canary Islands. They don't come to us from America. They don't fly across the whole Atlantic Ocean, all 3,000 miles. They come up from the Canaries up that way.
You're absolutely sure
of
that?
Yes, well, I am absolutely sure about this. Yeah,
Oh, you're absolutely sure of it. Getting that excited about it. I mean, you can put a little ring on a bird's leg and you can monitor where it was born and where it travelled to. How do you do that with a butterfly?
I know that this is so because when they look at because there's genetic differences between the monarchs in America and the ones in the Canaries. So the ones we get here are the Canary ones, not the American ones. So unless there was a storm, and occasionally there is, where you would have gale force winds coming from America across here and some butterfly might be blown across, but they don't come under their own steam that way. So they don't have the same energy. They're not birds, they're insects. So they don't come with the same body fats and things that the geese and all they do.
Okay,
they come in hopscotch.
Question I was asking. Go on anyway, Richard.
I think, Tomás, you could divide the butterfly population into a group of specialists. I suppose there's about 12 or 15 ones that have specialist habitats, usually in fairly protected, unchanging areas. And then you have the hoi polloi, the commoner gardeners, the sort of general hewers of wood and drawers of water that live in the countryside generally.
Yeah.
Now, have you noticed any difference in numbers between the two? I would expect the countryside ones to be much more inclined to fluctuate up and down and suffer from all kinds of things, whereas the specialists in their rather protected areas would tend to do better. Is there any evidence that this actually happens?
On a European scale, certainly. Yeah, I mean, the specialists are suffering because they can't move with their habitat, because the habitat itself is generally fixed in place and is quite defined. But we are seeing trends with generalist species, which is actually very concerning. If a generalist species is in decline, well, that really does mean that the habitat is getting hammered, or that the type of land use is becoming so intensive that even a generalist species can't do particularly well. So specific examples from Ireland would actually be the small tortoiseshell. So over the 6 years of this scheme, we can actually show that it has actually been in decline. Now, that's quite a generous species. You do find it in most locations.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And it's one of the first things you typically see in spring. Mm. And even though we found it in high numbers across the years, those numbers have been consistently going down year on year. So, I mean, that's one thing.
And yes, it lays its eggs on nettles, and you can't exactly say nettles are in decline.
True. So maybe it's something climatic, or maybe there's a disease that we're not aware of, or we don't know ultimately. But at least now we can start definitively saying, look, something is happening now with small tortoiseshell because
are you
of the
data. Upsetting this a bit. I mean, if you train people to, the first time you go out looking for butterflies, you don't find too many. But as you get better at it, you tend to find more. You tend to be cuter. You know where they are, and you know what they are, and you don't waste time trying to identify things. Mm. So I would expect your team of counters to get better and better, and that they would tend to get an improvement year on year.
Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, then, we would expect the harder to identify butterflies to increase in abundance over years because they've been seen more. But we don't actually see that. Like again, the small tortoiseshell is quite an apparent thing. You can't really mix it up with many things.
No, it's obvious.
And the fact that that's actually in decline, well, then that would go against that. So I think other things as well, like the large white. I mean, it was one of the big losers that we saw from the monitoring scheme as well. And again, it's quite surprising. It does well in it's one of those generous ones you've just described.
Yeah, I mean,
it does
the garden
well on the whites.
That.
You raised the whites.
Exactly, yeah.
That's an interesting one you raised. Now, we've got the real white, which is in parts of the country, is indistinguishable from the large white.
No, you're thinking about the wood white.
The wood white.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then you have the other whites, the green vein, the lesser, and so on, and the cabbage white. So you've got these whites, and they're a nightmare to try and separate them. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Now, if a counter's going out and countering these things, you can't distinguish one. Do you have some kind of, just write down white and we will divide it up on a percentage basis
something? We spend time on the workshops concentrating on the different groups, like going through the wood white, going through the meadow browns and the ringlets and things like that, and also the whites as well. So specifically with the whites, it's really Leptidia juvernica, that particular subspecies, that is the most common one outside of the burn within Ireland. So anybody doing any of their sites outside of the burn, we presume that it's that species because that's the only one we find. Leptidia sinapis is that specialist cryptic species that we only find now within the burn. But the funny thing is that specific Leptilia sinapis is genetically similar to a lot of continental species. So
it's the wood white you're talking about.
This is the wood white. Yeah. Sorry, that particular wood white we only find in the burn is really quite uniform genetically. I mean, it is a continental thing. Whereas the most common one that we have isn't present in Britain and it seems to be genetically completely distinct to continental populations. So it's a very unusual and a very valuable resource to have. It could potentially be a new subspecies.
Very quickly, I know you're looking for volunteers to count in Louth, Limerick and Monaghan.
Yes. So again, if you see a monitoring scheme in your location, check our website, biodiversityireland.ie. Come along to the workshop. We'll train you up and we'd love to have more people on the scheme.
Tomás, thank you for coming in. And we'll make sure those details are on our website, rte.ie/move.